This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay. Very much a hot topic this week. The subject of mental health and criminal justice. We have a long list of guests who we will introduce one at a time later on. But initially, Dr. Don Noggle is the mental health director of County Correctional Services at the county jail. I said prison in practice, and I was corrected. You can explain that difference in a minute. And Shelley Curran, who works to identify individuals that are eligible for mental health services while they're in jail or juvenile detention or probation or have some other contact with the criminal justice system. So I'm going to start with Dr. Noggle, MD.
PhD.
PhD. Oh, the bio came in wrong. Okay. Psychologist?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the dimensions. What's wrong with the interface that we have between mental health and criminal justice?
Well, it's an imperfect fit in the first place, because in criminal justice, there's really more findings are on black and white issues. And in mental health, there's a lot more nuance. So what we see now is because of the lack of services, I mean, way back in the 60s or 70s, when we started losing hospital beds, there were more people that were seriously mentally ill or having serious mental health needs.
And we're talking about mental health hospital beds.
Yes.
We're not talking
about
just hospital beds. Okay,
no,
just want to clarify for everybody.
You.
Okay,
mental health hospital beds. And what we found is that we had more people out in the community without the right amount of support and then becoming homeless. And then these people end up, there's a proportionate rise in people in the criminal justice system that are now incarcerated, both in jails and in prisons, that correlates directly with that lack of hospital beds for the mentally ill out in the community.
This is what we were, I think, was referred to at the time as deinstitutionalization. It was a movement.
Correct.
We're incapacitating all these people who really aren't criminals, but they have some capability of living alone. But we kind of just dumped them out on the street, is that?
I think the expectation that somehow these people would find their way to services, but that just didn't happen.
So what is it
for many?
What is it that you do within the jail system?
We serve the people that come into the jail, and jails are different than prisons because people are in for a very brief time often. So about 6 to 7% of our population that comes in is seriously mentally ill. But there's a whole huge percentage of people that have serious mental health problems or addictions or substance abuse disorders. So our job is...
Substance abuse is not included in that 6 or 7%, is it?
No, no. When you talk about that, we're talking about 75 to 80%
right.
of our population.
Wow. And give me some idea. How many people go through the Maricopa County jail system in the course of a year?
It's like 90,000. We do have fewer people now. I mean, we've had a census... Mm-hmm. A jail census of as high as almost 12,000. And now...
So 90,000 people go through the system in a year.
In a year.
The bed capacity is around 12,000 at any given point in time.
Yeah.
And are you touching each of these people? Or are you or your staff touching each one of these people?
Every single one of these
wow.
people that come in get a comprehensive health screening that includes psychiatric screening to make sure that people are not suicidal or don't have a psychiatric issue that needs immediate attention, any serious chronic care condition, or withdrawal, if they're going to suffer from withdrawal. Mm-hmm. Then they go through...
You mean a drug withdrawal.
A drug withdrawal,
sure, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Then they go to the initial appearance, and if they're not released from jail, within 24 hours or right at 24 hours, they get a comprehensive health assessment. So it's another opportunity to screen them and do a fuller assessment. So we are actually interacting with people from the minute that they walk in. We're asking the police, was there anything observable, any injuries, any odd behavior, so that we're really carefully tracking the population and providing the needs that we need to provide for them, because the goal is to keep everybody safe.
Yeah. I had no idea this existed.
Yeah. We get
no
people. We get people on their medications. Shelley will talk a little bit more about the data link because she was instrumental in getting that going. We can, if they're seriously mentally ill, for those folks, we can find out what medications they're on. So we are continuing the care of medications. Now, the more difficult issue is for people that really have fallen out of care and are not on medication and are really in serious need.
So let's say you have somebody comes in, they're rested on for something. And I know a large percentage of people in jail are there pretrial. They haven't been convicted of anything, but they're in the system. They're waiting to see a judge, or the judge has set bail and they can't make the bail. Let's say you interact with one of these folks and you say, there's a serious mental health issue. Do you play a role in sort of keeping them in a custodial situation if it's somebody that you don't think? What's the criteria for keeping somebody in?
Well, our goal,
other than a criminal basis,
our goal is to get them out.
Okay.
I mean, the jail really is not the ideal place for people to be receiving care. I say all the time, I'm a woman that should be putting myself out of a job. Mm-hmm. So we're identifying people, working with the Regional Behavioral Health Authority, which has taken amazing steps to be able to get people navigated out if they have conditions of release and the charge is not one that would keep them in. So we never want to keep them in for safety reasons. We want to help navigate them out.
But isn't the incarceration good to an extent that most people that are suffering from mental health issues aren't seeking treatment? It's almost like, now you got them. Okay, we have them here. We can at least identify and move them on the right path. No, am I trying to paint some sunshine on this?
I think that you are echoing what a lot of judicial officers have felt. And so what we know is nationwide, and truly for Maricopa County, the seriously mentally ill have a longer stay. And that's because people feel like, well, now they can get the care they need. And what I would say is, that is a default position that is incorrect.
Is there, let me ask about the flip side of that. So your goal is to get somebody out. Is there a system that is reliable to capture people and plug them into some appropriate care?
You know, that's a tough question. For people that are willing, and again, let's remember, there are certain charges that no matter how perfect the system is, they're not getting out.
And they're not getting out because of mental health status. They're getting out because the crime is of sufficiently low, right?
Right. Yeah. So let's assume we're just talking about that population. For the people that are engaged and willing to engage, there's a good system, particularly for people that are designated seriously mentally ill. We have a great system in this county. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is for people who have recidivated, who've come back into the jail over and over. And what you see is people who have become disaffected from the system. And now it's very difficult to get them to engage. They're demoralized. And this is the population that we're all in the county focusing with our Smart Justice Initiative. Mm-hmm. We've got to get these folks identified.
We're talking mental health in our justice system. We have an all-star panel here with us. Stay right here. KTR News, The Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are here in the Think Tank. We're discussing the intersection of criminal justice and mental health. Don Nogle, we've been speaking to. Shelley Curran, tell us what you do and how does that relate to what Don does?
Yes, Don and I work very closely together, and our staff do as well. One of the things that I do at Mercy Maricopa, and I have a team of 10 staff that work with me, we're all mental health professionals. We all have experience working both with people in the community who need mental health and substance abuse services, as well as have experience working with the justice system, because usually those two systems don't understand each other very well. So we are the link between, my court services department is the link between the criminal justice system and the mental health system. One of the first things that we do if someone does end up in jail, as Dr. Nogle was explaining earlier, is that we have a jail data link where every 15 minutes, everybody who's booked into the county jail, their information is sent over to Mercy Maricopa. We match that up against our enrollment files.
Tell us who Mercy Maricopa.
Yeah, Mercy Maricopa is the Regional Behavioral Health Authority in Maricopa County, and we are contracted.
In English, what does that mean?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
And we are contracted with the Division of Behavioral Health to provide mental health and substance abuse services to the indigent population in Maricopa County, so the Medicaid population, and also for people who are determined to be seriously mentally ill, regardless of their income or eligibility from an income status, just based on their diagnosis and functional criteria, they will receive services through us.
Okay, my layman's interpretation of that is you are an entity, you're an organization, nonprofit organization that is contracted by the county to perform services.
By the state.
By the state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And so what we do is we match the information from the jail against our enrollment files so that for two reasons. One, so that we can know if someone that's enrolled with us or has fallen out of care shows up in jail. So that
you find out about that when they're booked?
We do. And I have staff that are co-located down at the 4th Avenue Jail, which is the central booking facility for Maricopa County Jail, so that we can provide some immediate connections for them if they are able to be released right back out to the community with some supports. So they're not just hitting the street with no help at all. It's like, oh, my gosh, John's in jail. Let's get someone here to pick him up. Let's find a place where he can stay tonight if he's lost his housing, and let's get him reconnected into services. What can we do to try to get people out of jail right there at that initial appearance? Because what we've seen, and there's judges that have big hearts, and exactly like you were saying earlier, Mike, is that we've got folks that come into custody, and you think, wow, this person doesn't look like they're doing very well. I'm concerned about them going out on the street. And we call it a mercy bond, right? The judge will give someone a bond because they look unstable in front of them where they would not give anybody else for that same exact crime and that same exact history a bond.
Paint us a picture. What kind of crimes are we talking about? What are they arrested for? It's a typical case.
Oh, it can vary. It can be something as simple as they were out in front of the Circle K and maybe they were acting in a way that caused people to feel uncomfortable. And the
so
owner
they got arrested
the,
for loitering,
could,
probably,
could
or something?
Be, mm-hmm. Or it could be that it could be loitering, it could be trespassing, it could be just some crimes of homelessness that there are statutes now in different cities where people can't sit on sidewalks for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. And
right.
So that those types of offenses. And so they come in, and we want to be able to let that initial appearance judge know, we understand that you're concerned about this person, but if anybody else you would let go that doesn't present like this in front of you, please let us, we will promise that we'll get him back to court. We will pick him up and we will take him someplace where he can start to receive some help. And one of the main reasons why people, at least with a serious mental illness, end up being arrested is not that initial offense, is their failure to appear for the next court date. Mm. And as soon as you've had a failure to appear for your court date, when you do eventually
courts
get
don't
picked
like that.
Up again, then you're not leaving until they are done with you, right? Until your case has gone all the way to a disposition.
Because you're presumed to be a flight risk or you haven't shown, and the courts don't like that.
Exactly. So that's why it's important for us to identify folks so that, one, we can be there to provide some additional support to see what was it that led this person to be arrested in the first place. And then second is, what can we do to make sure that they get out of jail if they don't need to be there based on their risk to the community? And what can we do to make sure that they show back up for court again? Are they someone who needs a ride? Are they somebody who forgets? Or they aren't certain of navigating back to the courthouse? They could live anywhere in the county and end up at 4th Avenue Jail. How do they get home? So that's what we do with the data link. And then the good thing about the data link, too, is it not only comes to us, but then it goes back to Dr. Noggle and her staff so that they know, hey, this person has been determined to have a serious mental illness in the community, because he may or may not feel like sharing that with Don's staff when he is first booked into jail. So regardless of what that person's self-report is, she knows through the data link if this is someone that is engaged in our system or has fallen out.
You're both painting a pretty positive picture of the way we handle folks. Is it that good?
This has evolved over years, but yeah, I would say it's that good.
The question is, what happens once we get them back out in the community? And some of these people need significant services. And the one thing that will come up, I'm sure, is people need housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the new slogan, housing is health care. So we can get them navigated out. We get them identified. Shelley's staff and the staff from the various peer agencies, the different clinics, they'll come in to meet them. They'll pick them up at the door, which is huge. Now, that's really just started happening in the last 4 or 5 years? 2012.
Not quite that long, yeah.
About 2012, mm-hmm. The end of 2012. So that's huge. There's all of these steps that have been made. But if people don't have a stable place to be, so what if they get their initial psychiatric medications?
Mm-hmm. So the rosiness is more on the front end, the short-term handling of the intersection than it is.
We've done a lot of work in that. Yeah.
Wow. I can say I did not know any of this was going on, and I think it's amazing what you're doing. I think it's phenomenal what the both of you are doing, and it's encouraging to know that our state is doing something, at least at the beginning.
We have 15 psychiatrists. We have 50 mental health staff. We have staff that are constantly capable of being there and responding to the needs of people.
Just out of curiosity, I know you work in the county jail. Do you work for the county? Do you work for the sheriff?
We work for the county. So mm-hmm. Maricopa County Correctional Health Services, mm-hmm. and we report up to the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. So it's a different reporting chain.
How is your relationships with the sheriffs and their organization?
You know, I'd have to say very good. At this mm-hmm. point, the sheriff's office, they lead, Chief mm-hmm. Brian Lee leads the Smart Justice. I'm the co-chair, mm-hmm. and they are really diligently working on these smart justice initiatives. These are just the stories, I think, that don't get told.
Yeah, I think it's great.
We have just a minute. You want to tell us real quick what the Smart Justice Initiative is?
Yeah, this is a task force that reports to the Maricopa County Steering Committee for Justice-Related Issues. And it involves people at my level. Our Deputy County Manager, Mary Ellen Shepherd, is there. And it's really a work group that came together to really look at each different stage of this process. Mm-hmm. What can we do? Public defenders, prosecutors, probation. Shelley there is there representing Mercy Maricopa to really look at in the whole continuum what can be done to reduce the number of people in jail, reduce length of stay, and specifically we have focused on the issue of seriously mentally ill and trying to make reductions in both.
Okay, wow. My goodness. And like I said, I didn't know this. I'm so excited that I do know this. And thank you both for doing everything that you're doing. It's absolutely amazing. Wow, we're talking about mental health in our justice system here in Arizona. Let's take a look at that.
When we come back, we're going to have Frank O'Halloran, who is a former Scottsdale police officer. And we're going to hear about the law enforcement perspective on some of this.
Next on the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're in the Think Tank. We're talking the intersection of criminal justice and mental health. We've been talking with two mental health professionals. Frank O'Halloran is a retired Scottsdale police lieutenant who has served as a hostage negotiator and, among other things, a trainer and expert in crisis intervention. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about what you're hearing about and what you're doing about this from the perspective of somebody involved in a career in law enforcement.
Sure. We, in my current position at Mercy Maricopa, I help train police officers in crisis intervention training, and we support as a regional behavioral health authority the full spectrum, all five components of the crisis intervention training, CIT, as it's commonly known. And one of them is to have a robust crisis system so the police have somewhere to bring someone who is in a behavioral health crisis. And we have several facilities, and we subscribe to the no wrong door policy. So if a police officer brings somebody in, it doesn't matter where they bring them. We will figure it out where they should be, the proper place for them. And we also have very quick drop-off times. We average 3 minutes for a police officer to bring someone in to process them, and then they get the care they need. Hmm. That equated to almost 19,000 drop-offs for police officers last year.
In the county?
In the county, yes, between all of our facilities.
And where are they being dropped off?
Well, there's many locations, really, but the three main locations, there's one in the East Valley, there's one in South Central, and then there's one on the west side in Peoria as well. Those are our acute emergency psychiatric centers where our most acute cases will go. But we also have an access point on the west side, and, of course, if someone was brought into a detox center, we would take them as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what sort of things do you look at? Where's the line here between somebody, you know, there's a difference between mental health and somebody acting somewhat erratically or irrationally?
Sure. And that is an assessment that is done oftentimes, well, at least 19,000 times last year by the police officer, and they actually get it right most of the time. It is pretty rare that the facility has to call for emergency medical assistance or has to call back and there was some sort of crime that was committed after they arrived at the facility. So, and that's part of the training. There's a 40-hour training that begins with psychological disorders and works all the way through to engagement and how to actually engage and communicate more effectively with someone who's in a crisis.
40 hours of training is significant. All police officers in the county get this?
No, not at all. Actually, we perform about six, there's almost 10 trainings per year now. Mm-hmm. That started only a year ago, though. But over the last 12, 13 years, we've trained 4,500 police officers in this, and we will train many more than that now as we've increased the trainings.
All right, so 4,500 trained. What's that as a percentage of the county police officers? You're adding together all the – I just want some sense of what percentage of police officers in the, that you might encounter anywhere in Maricopa County have been through training like this.
Well, there's 4,500 that have been through CIT. Now, right. Of course, there's turnover, and of course, this is a patrol officer directed program, because they're the ones who are going to be the ones who make the most contact. They are the gatekeepers to the to the mental health system. Actually, one of our facilities alone is 40% of the those who come in are police drop offs. So 40% of essentially their business is police, and the other two facilities are very close to that. Mm-hmm. So. We're
looking at 19,000 drop-offs, though. 4,500 cops have been through this training. You said with turnover. So, I mean, we're talking maybe active, maybe 3,000-ish are still around.
Very hard number to...
We're talking 19,000 drop-offs. The ones that go wrong, those are the ones that are making headlines.
Exactly.
19,000 drop-offs is absolutely amazing. Because
isn't it?
When something goes wrong here in the media, we report on that.
Sure.
And then everyone screams for change. We need change. Why isn't this... you guys are doing a pretty darn good job at this.
Thank you. I think we are as well. And in fact, there's very few places, and I'll say very few because I don't know of any that actually can come up with that number. Just our tracking alone is superior to everybody else that we know we're doing CIT. Because again, we subscribe to the entire Memphis model as a five-legged stool model, and one of them is the robust. System, and the other is the police training, but we also train community and behavioral health professionals as well. So those are all the components of the CIT model.
And this is a Shelley again. When you look at the number of persons with serious mental illness that are booked into our jail, as Dr. Noggle was saying, it's around 7%. And when you look at nationwide, it's much higher than that. The folks that are booked into jail here with serious mental illness, they stay longer, right, than the general population. And that isn't something that we are working on to see what we can do to get people out of jail sooner if they don't need to be there for justice reasons. If they're there for mental health reasons, we don't want them in the jail. But the fact that police officers have an option to take somebody to a psychiatric crisis center and be able to have them get the care they need and be able to be in and out of there and back onto their patrol within 3-4 minutes is just amazing.
So part of that, you're saying if the national numbers are higher than this 7 or 9%, that's success. That means you're taking people who don't belong in jail somewhere else, and they're never getting into the system.
Right. And I haven't even mentioned the crisis line. They handle about 13,000 calls every month, and they dispatch about 1,200 mobile teams as well. Mm. And police officers will often give a warm handoff, if you will, to a mobile team. So those aren't even counted into the 19,000. Right. So there's much more desired outcomes than ever gets reported.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. And now those that have been through this type of training, because this, I think, has been making the headlines, those that have been through that training, are they dispersed in a geographical way that there's a certain amount per area?
That's challenging. Now, clearly, every police department I know of in the Valley, you know, there's 25 law enforcement agencies in the Valley, approximately, too, if you count the federal, which are now going to our trainings, too. So we have to count the federal agencies, and we get a few in each, but we're getting there. Certainly, there are police officers trained in every police department. I'll go out on the limb here and say every police department, but have being you're a retired police supervisor, it is challenging to keep even one on a squad just because the turnover is so great in that world.
Mm. And it's kind of luck of the draw who gets assigned a particular call.
It can be. Certainly who gets assigned. But what we hope and what we encourage in the CIT training is that CIT officer steps up and says, I can handle it. Or a supervisor recognizes that I have a CIT or even another district or another beat, and then they can go to that call.
Let's say I'm the rookie and I haven't been through any of this. Can I call back and say, look, this is a situation, we need other people here. We need CIT trained people here.
Absolutely.
Okay, wonderful.
Yes.
That's amazing.
I'll offer a little historical perspective as the one who was an officer in the early 70s. It was very, very different. Basically,
yes.
You had a case like this. You basically take somebody who looked like that. Your choice was A, arrest him, or very, if a little less. If it fell below the threshold of that, you basically just try to encourage them to leave a situation, just go somewhere else, you know.
And, right.
And, you know, it was very much oriented towards diffusing a situation in the next 30 minutes. And whatever happened, there was frankly nowhere to go.
So. Exactly. Even 27 years ago when I began, there was very few places to go. We spent hours at the county hospital if we were going to do that. And a police officer has an option of spending 15 minutes in a jail or 3 hours in a hospital.
Oh, absolutely. If you're under the gun.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
The amount of time for the handoff, I assume, is a huge influence on police behavior.
I got
a 3-minute handoff. That is a... That's a gold standard kind of option to be taken.
It definitely is. I mean, most officers are empathetic to the person's behavioral health crisis, but they also have other things they have to do. And if they feel that a jail is safe, or the person is safe now, and the public is safe, or an emergency department is a safe place, and they can go and they can leave, and the person's safe and everybody is safe, that's what they're going to do. But it's not the correct place to bring someone.
Have you seen a change in police culture on issues like this in terms of, you know, police seeing this as part of their job?
That's a great question. Yes, I think I have. I also give training at the Arizona Law Enforcement Academy in Phoenix at South Mountain. So I used to ask the question when I gave the mental health portion of it, did anybody think they were getting into behavioral health work? And years ago, nobody would raise their hand.
Oh, I'm here to fight crime.
Exactly. Right. And now it's very different. Almost everybody gets it. Almost every hand will go up.
In fact, I remember there was a refrain in culture that we heard all the time. I'm not a social worker.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I didn't take this to become a social worker.
Exactly. Right.
All right, so we're talking about mental health in our justice system. We've heard from the doctor's side. We've heard from the law side. Let's talk about community outreach when we return on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back in The Think Tank discussing the intersection of mental health and criminal justice. We've heard from the mental health people. We've heard from someone from law enforcement. Mary Lou Brinsick, you are a citizen who has had a family member who has been caught in this nexus, and you get involved. Tell us about what you've done and what your organization is about, and tell us a little bit about what you see happening in this area.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate very much the opportunity to share today. Our organization, David's Hope, is a nonprofit 501c3. We also lead the Arizona Mental Health and Criminal Justice Coalition, which was actually founded and created by our other two guests here, Shelley Kern and Dr. Noggle, along with a representative from Maricopa County Adult Probation. As you said, there are a lot of good things happening, which our guests gave a wonderful representation of. So much progress has gone on. At the same time, when our family members first became involved in this, we felt like it was so bad, it was so horrific, that it was so much easier to end up with a jail bed.
How far back are we talking?
Than it was a treatment bed. About 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I thought, how did it get this bad? I had to quit my job as a nurse, pretty much become a full-time caretaker for my son, and started studying and researching. And to my horror, I found out that the state of Arizona was actually, the Treatment Advocacy Center had done a study showing rates of incarceration of people with serious mental illness across the country. Studying the states, Arizona actually ranked second to the highest for your odds of being incarcerated rather than in a treatment facility if you had a mental illness. So I was horrified. It felt true to me at the time, but I thought, how did it get this bad? I started looking at sentencing laws, why so many jail beds? Why are we always building prisons? Why so few hospital beds being created? And And really, it seemed to me at the time that the chances of ending up in the right place was like the chance of getting struck by lightning. So much easier to end up in jail.
There wasn't a system, you're saying?
Well, I mean, everyone's circumstance is different. Mm-hmm. My son was very ill and just happened to do things that would, as Shelley had mentioned earlier, draw the, not anything spectacular, but draw the attention of people nearby that'd be concerned and call law enforcement. One of the things that I always say is our problem is not with law enforcement, and I want to reemphasize that. I appreciate so much Frank being here today, and really our state is doing fantastic work in law enforcement. I can't emphasize that enough. I want to make sure to talk about what the best tool that we found to really cohesively attack the problem. This is a very complex problem. We're not just talking about that interaction with law enforcement. We're not just talking about the different parts, but we really need to look at it as a whole. And there's an initiative that was created by Judge Lifman, Judge Stephen Lifman, out of Miami, Florida. I had found about him many, many years ago and started following his work. And he's actually the architect of what's called the National Stepping Up Initiative. And when I found out about the national initiative, and I can give you the website where folks can look that up, it's stepuptogether.org. There's actually a national effort headed by the Department of Justice and several other large government, Council of State Governments, the American Psychiatric Foundation, and the National Association of Counties, and they've put together a comprehensive plan where across the United States, counties are signing on, creating county teams, which involve all the numerous stakeholders, stakeholders such as Don mentioned were on the Smart Justice, but also community members that are involved in the system, family members, faith leaders, anyone affected by this problem, which really is everyone. And we're working right now in Arizona to make sure that all of Arizona's counties sign on to the national initiative. We were actually out in Yavapai County yesterday, and we're thrilled that Sheriff Masher up there was able to, and Captain David Rhodes from the Sheriff's Office had been working with the Board of Supervisors up there, and they just signed the initiative yesterday. So I can't emphasize enough that I know our time's limited here, and I want to make sure that I get the very best information out to your audience. So looking at the National Stepping Up Initiative, understanding that, and helping us see that implemented here in Arizona is the best tool we have to really attack this problem.
You have a
Give the website one more time.
Okay, that website for the national initiative is stepuptogether.org.
Okay, thank you.
And then also our conference we have coming up, and it happens to be next week, and we still have seats there. Our conference is called Step Up Arizona 2016. And to register for that, you can get the information on our website. Our website is davidshopeaz.org. And we have law enforcement, court officials, probation officers, community members, faith leaders from all over the state gathering next week on June 9th and 10th.
I would point out that's this week, so if you're interested, you can do real quick the website one more time, and if you're interested, you should go there right away. The website is?
The website to register for the summit is davidshopeaz.org, and there'll be a link there to take you to registration.
And you can get registration and information as well.
Yes.
Okay. I want to pick up on one thing with either Don or Shelley. Reference that Mary Lou made to high incarceration rates 10 years ago, that seems to me the sort of thing you would get when there's not an alternative. Is that essentially what sounds like?
Yes,
what your work has been set up to address?
That is the case. And there's been incredible expansion in our crisis services, both in facilities in regards to the psychiatric emergency rooms, which now we have three that can accept people even if they're not willing to come in. The police can bring them in involuntarily. And there used to, for years and years, there was one. And then then there was two for a long time, and we just recently, you know, added the third one. So just the expansion in the crisis system, I think, has helped quite a bit. And then also we've, with Medicaid expansion, there's more funding in our system now that allows us to not only provide those crisis services, but ongoing follow-up care. And there was a few years that we had right around 2010 when the state budget had constricted so much with the people that were not eligible for health insurance through the state, that there were just, even if they had a serious mental illness, they weren't getting a full range of services. So the funding has increased through Medicaid expansion, and we've also been able to expand our crisis system. I think it's made a world of difference.
So it sounds like you are a conduit providing care, but you're not necessarily in a position to use your funding to provide it. Is that a fair statement?
We don't provide direct care at Mercy Maricopa, mm-hmm. But we do contract with providers in the community mm-hmm. who provide those services.
But you're dependent on other streams of money in
federal
the system,
and state. Yep.
Without which it doesn't happen.
Absolutely.
And I would just add that those services alone are not going to be enough, at least from our experience in the jail, with people that have been incarcerated over and over, where those systems aren't, that type of system is not helping. We have to have a way that people are safely housed. People have to have some form of stable housing. And this is a huge issue and just needs to be
addressed. Has anybody, just from the sort of the hard-nosed taxpayer side of this, taken a look at what's the relative cost of providing these kinds of services as opposed to leaving somebody in jail?
There is actually a lot of work going on around that right now. There's a grant that has been received, a Robert Woods Johnson grant by ASU, which is really going to start looking at people who end up in jail are often high utilizers of other services. Mm-hmm. So how do we look at that cost? And Maricopa County, we're one of the early adopters of stepping up, and mm-hmm. we were just in Washington, D.C., for 50 counties that were selected. We were one of them. Shelley and I were there.
Well, kind of nice to see us on the front end of something.
How about that? Check us out, right?
Laggard.
I mean, we get this, like I said, the few that we see that gets all the press, and we have four people in front of us that are tirelessly working and doing the most for our community and the mental health in our justice system. Thank you all so much for everything that you're doing. Continued success in any way we can help. We would love to. Doc O'Neill, thank you very much.
Yeah, and reminder, you can get all of our old shows logged in at MikeO'Neill.org. Going back 4 years now, they're all there.
And right on KTAR.com as well. Thanks for hanging out with us in the Think Tank.